I want to welcome everybody. Thank you so much for joining the MVP Academy today on this call with Mickey Cashman. The call, as you know, is called Working for Transformation Without Creating the Past, and it's a preview of her ongoing course that we'll start later. And so I just want to start by asking you this question. Do you ever feel overwhelmed and helpless when you think about all the suffering, oppression, and war that are happening in the world every day? Does that ever get to you? Or maybe you're involved with social change efforts, but find yourself feeling burned out and want hope that long-lasting change is even possible. Or perhaps you've been practicing nonviolent communication in your own life and would like to branch out into the world of social transformation. If any of these apply to you, Mickey Cashman's course today could be a great support to you, truly could be a great support to you. We're going to start the session with Mickey finding a volunteer to work with to explore how you could transform a group, organization, or campaign by aligning your values with the three pillars of nonviolence, by aligning your actions with the three pillars of nonviolence, which are love, truth, and courage. And together with her volunteer and you, Mickey will offer an overview of how the principles behind nonviolent communication can be applied to transformative social change every single step along the way. What we're really hoping for is that you'll walk away with new hope and clarity for how to fill your social change work with more creativity, power, and life, so that you can walk away inspired and ready to move on with the tips you'll get today. There's going to be plenty of time to ask questions at the end of today's session. And later in the call, she'll talk about her upcoming 12-week course, Working for Transformation Without Creating the Past. And then we'll end with Mickey offering one concrete tip that she'd like you to walk away with today that she thinks will make a difference in your work and life today. So as I said earlier, you're really in for a treat. I mean that sincerely. I hope you'll sit back and relax as I introduce Mickey Cashman and then turn the call over to her. So Mickey Cashman earned her PhD in sociology from UC Berkeley and has been a certified trainer for the Center for Nonviolent Communication for many years. She was one of my first teachers, I think 16 years ago, in fact. She's a co-founder of BayNVC and founder of Center for Efficient Collaboration and the author of three books and many articles that have been published in international publications, including the New York Times, Cocoon, and others. Her blog, The Fearless Heart, is a mainstay for people from around the world who are hungry for an alternative to the obvious and subtle violence we live in daily. And above all else, she's an intellectual who has devoted her life's work to shaping a livable future for us all, using collaborative tools that are based on the principles of nonviolent communication. And to that end, she brings laser-sharp clarity to the most complex, seemingly impossible issues, rendering them simple and resolvable. It's one of her greatest talents. And honestly, I think she's brilliant. I think Mickey Cashman is brilliant. And I couldn't be more proud than I am to bring her to the Academy, the NBC Academy today and in the past with all the courses she's taught us. Welcome, Mickey. I'm so glad to welcome you yet again to the NBC Academy. So, Mickey, I am excited about the course, and I know you are too. Can you tell me just a little bit about why you're excited about this course before you pick a volunteer and take over the call?
Yes, I can tell you because I've been waiting for this moment for a very long time. I am excited about it because I sense everywhere in my body that we all want to know how to do things in a way that is aligned with the world we want to create. And it is sometimes exceedingly difficult to do when we run up against the obstacles of working in the world as it is, when we internally have taken in the training that trains us to be members of this society that is not designed to work for people, and we don't have a lot of models. So my excitement is about working with a group of people who are really committed to discovering in the most practical way, how Can we liberate ourselves from the legacy of the past sufficiently that we can work for transformation, for creating something new, without essentially recreating what has happened before? Because there's so many examples of movements with great vision that ended up creating the same thing that happened before, just with different people at the top. So for me, the vision is about no longer having people at the top, about changing the whole paradigm of how we make decisions, how we collaborate, how we work together, how we create and share resources. And all of that has practical applications every step of the way, and that's what I want to focus on.
Wow, it sounds wonderful, Mickey. So, Mickey, I think with that, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you get started. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mary. So I'm so excited to have so many people interested in this topic. And I would like to take a moment, maybe in silence, for people to think, what is it that pulled you to come today and to participate in this call? What is attracting you? And in particular, if you are part of a movement or some social action group or doing organizing work in the front lines or anything of this nature, and you have a particular place where you are challenged to know what it means to do your work according to the principles of nonviolence, then I will hear from a few of you and see the range of what brings people here, and then pick one person to engage with more deeply. Let's start.
Hi, Mickey. I have two kind of realms that I am focusing my political energy on right now, and one of them is an organization called Divest Victoria.
Tell me, where is your challenge?
I'm one of the co-chairs, and we're talking a lot about how to structure our organization. And on the one hand, I feel really pulled to have completely distributed leadership. And on the other hand, two of us have been kind of founding this and pouring our hearts into it. And also, when we're going out into the community, there's some way in which having a title that is at the top gives you more legitimacy or credibility in people's minds, especially in government and so on.
I totally understand the challenge of leadership and how to do leadership in a way that is aligned with the principles of nonviolence is an old and deep question, and I am noting it. I want to say that for me, it's not an either or, that there's a way to do both, and that's what I would hope to demonstrate, if not today, then in the part of the course when we get to talk about leadership, how to do leadership in a new way, so we're not at either top-down power over leadership, or a structureless chaos that can interfere with effectiveness. So thank you. Let's hear. In fact, I will call on names I'm not familiar with, because as far as I know, there are many people who came on this call who are not previously acquainted with the NVC Academy or with NVC at all. So I'd like to catch those. Hi.
I guess in brief, the situation that I'm interested in is that I'm in a place with a few other people that are involved in NVC, and I have a lot of ideas about things that I want to put forward, and generally I feel that I'm acting alone, and burnout has been something that's been somewhat of a recurring theme, so I'd like to ask for any and all approaches to burnout.
Thank you. I'll give you one quick tip. Really be rigorous with yourself to do only what you're truly willing to do. And that's a very difficult discipline, but it's a very good protector against burnout. So let me hear from a few more people, and then we'll see what to select.
Hello.
Hi.
All right, I'm currently calling from Guatemala. A dear friend of mine introduced me to your work, and the struggle I'm working with right now is working with to support leaders of organizations who want to learn how to support, how to have real conversations about power without, like what you were saying earlier, having a chaos organization, but without being in a hyper-controlling mode. in a lot of my conversations with particular individuals, the moment we get to places about looking at and being honest about the power that we hold, the conversation breaks down. It's either too scary, it's too painful. So figuring out how to support people in building the muscle to be able to have real conversations about power in leadership in a way that opens up spaces for others to step into their power and capacity is what I'm most curious about right now.
Yes, and I think that there's a lot about the topic of power that is filtered through shame for many people, shame and confusion. So fully owning power is very difficult because it seems like we are going to own something bad. If we are at all interested in transforming the structures of the world, then we have clarity that the power structures as they are currently set up are not working. So the horror of possibly being associated with that, or even worse, of recognizing any part of ourselves inside that might be longing for that simplicity of the capacity and the power to just tell people what to do. Finding any of that within and the fear of what others will say can be really paralyzing. So I start with a lot of compassion, and then we can take it from there either now or later in the course if you end up choosing to join us. So let me hear from a couple more people, and then I'll pick the topic. Thank you.
I'm yearning for this, and I'm yearning for it because I've hit a stumbling block. I run a nonprofit arts organization devoted to global peace and understanding, and we are tiny and not funded in any way. We're not underwritten, and we've achieved huge programs and projects using the arts as a tool for peace and understanding. We've just returned from Armenia. We've been poised to go to Auschwitz and Berlin. And my question is, how do I, as a leader and ambassador, how do I marshal a team? And the word marshal's the wrong word. How do I gather a team and build a team that works according to your principles or these extraordinary principles that actually can succeed in getting where we can do the most good, that is going to these locations that are interested in our program and the transformation we make possible, and yet we don't have the funding capacity or have not built the infrastructure to make that possible.
Got it. Okay, I see an emerging theme about leadership, which is very exciting for me because it's a topic that I've been grappling with for years, and I have learned some things and I have a lot more to learn. So thank you. And last person I will call on before choosing.
Hi, I'm excited to be a part of this. I work for an environmental organization, and we are really trying to reach some underserved communities and trying to create social change, certainly in terms of helping people understand that it's in their best interest to care for the environment, but are struggling with basic needs. So wondering about building leadership in that way, but how to you know, combat the racism and other isms that are going on in our society, as a bunch of us work here are a lot of white people, and we don't want to be the white savior. So looking at it from that aspect.
Yeah, I just want to say a couple of things, and then I think I'm going to focus with the people who have brought forward the topic of leadership because it seems particularly rich. What I want to say to you is that in situations such as the one that you describe, what I want to do, if I were in your shoes, is to learn rather than think that I have to teach. If I want to work with communities that my movement does not represent, that tells me that I'm doing something that isn't working for them. Mm-hmm. Because there are environmental movements that are led by people of color. They exist. They focus differently. They focus often on something called environmental justice. Are you familiar with that?
Yep, that has been now a big focus of ours.
Right. And let me just say this before I shift to the other piece, which is that I have a dear friend who is a social justice educator, has been for many years, Victor Lewis. Some people may know of him. And Victor has coined this metaphor. We are all in the same boat, not on the same deck. Meaning, some people sink first, and they sink differently. And this applies to environmental degradation, which is disproportionately affecting poor communities, third world communities, communities of color. And without learning about this, to try to get people to see that something is in their best interest, to me, keeps the white savior paradigm and is going to keep you separate. I want to leave you to chew on this, and if you join the course, of course we will talk much more about those issues of social power and privilege and how they affect our work for social transformation. Thanks. All right, so what I would like to do now is I would like to open the line. I'm going to open the line to three people in parallel. Laurel, Isaac, and Ellen. And so all three of you are now have an open line. And I was thinking instead of working with one, we can have a conversation, all four of us, because you see how all three of you are looking at a similar problem from different angles. But I just want to check with each of you if it makes sense to you that we are all in one conversation.
Yeah, that's
Ellen?
Great.
It's wonderful, yes.
Honored to be here.
So the issues as I see them, both internal to the person leading, internal to the movement, and external to what happens in the interface between the movement and the world. And there are challenges at each one of these. And I think, Laurel, you speak a lot about the first one. And to some extent, I think all of you touch on it. Let's hear from each of you. Where do you see the internal challenge? And let's start with Isaac. You've worked with people, and you've talked with them. If you could kind of like pinpoint, what do you see challenging for them about moving to a place where that can be talked about openly and transformed?
I think the core challenge that I see centers ultimately around trust. So this is a person who has done extraordinary things, has accomplished amazing results through a lot of sort of just belligerence, just like seeing a problem, seeing poverty, and just moving through like a juggernaut. It's an individual who very much, there's a lot of different sort of classic founder issues happening.
May I pause and say something about it before you go on to the next thing? If we're going to solve this leadership problem, this puzzle, it is absolutely clear to me that it has to be in a way that will allow people's gifts to be given. There's no model of moving forward that I want to give myself to that requires people to hold back.
Right.
And it's both for you and for Laurel. Laurel is one of the founders. There is a role for a founder that instead of being maligned, needs to be cherished and worked with in a way that the founder doesn't have to feel alone, stressed, overworked, misunderstood, and hopeless, which often happens. And I am some sort of a founder too myself, so I speak about it from both ends of it. And I'm wondering, Laurel, if the things that I'm saying ring true for you.
Very much so. Not the necessarily the alone, but this overstretched and kind of overworked and yeah, just longing for something that is going to work better for everyone.
Thank you. And Isaac, you wanted to say one more thing. I don't want to cut you off, and then I also want to hear from Ellen.
What you said resonates very deeply, and I think the challenge that I'm experiencing is I'm working with an individual who has lots of issues in their life around betrayal and trust, who will say directly to funders, the only person I trust is myself. And yet the heart of the issue is how to create a space where this person's gifts can really thrive, but where I can support them in being able to hear constructive critique in a way that does not instantly trigger a defensive cascade around shaming and blaming that everyone then gets very stuck in and people stop wanting to work with the organization.
Yeah, obviously, this is like just a tidbit. We're not actually going to solve the problem and we're just entering
it. Of course.
This is just a short preview call. But a couple of pointers. One is that another dynamic of leadership, especially in movements, is that people are both idolized and attacked. And I don't know if that's happened directly to this person or directly in this organization, but it's a very familiar dynamic. And so if you want to support the person to create change in how they function, you need to find a way to frame things in such a way that he cannot but see that you appreciate him. That you appreciate him, you support his values, you support his vision, you support his leadership, you want him to succeed, and you're giving him this information so that he can do better in all of these areas, not because there's something wrong with him. It's subtle and very important. Is it making sense?
It's an enormously powerful frame, so thank you.
Thank you. Let's hear from Ellen.
I'm the founder, and I'm called the visionary founder, and I'm also the artistic director. I, too, am idolized and attacked periodically. I almost wept, or did, when you described the issue around being cherished. And my deepest issue is actually fear. Fear and rushing in, fear of not knowing, for instance, how to deal with international diplomats and governments, and very personally having a spiritual diplomatic guide who was helping us, having her die in the last 4 months. She died very suddenly, and I feel that I don't have this capacity. I have not grown it yet. I don't have this capacity yet to know how to realize the full potential of what we're offering the world.
So let's pause for a moment, because you're on the verge of tears. And I want to say to everyone on the call and everyone who hears it later, I don't think we can go all the way to freedom internally or in the world without doing a whole lot of crying. There's a lot of mourning that we need to do in order to be able to keep showing up. And that I'm speaking to those of us who are, for whatever reason, taking on the role of leadership, whether it's formal, whether it's informal, whether it's in the movement, whether it's co-leadership. When we are called to serve, there's something that happens that requires more of us than just to go through life and go in the morning to a job and come home and cook for children and all of that stuff. It's something else, and we need all our energy. And the world doesn't work well. We know that. So how do we expect to not have to cry again and again? Here you are with a vision, and you're lacking vital resources to go for that vision. Of course, that's deeply saddening. So are you breathing?
I'm breathing and swallowing. And I thank you.
Yeah. So I wanna say that one of the things that I've learned about leadership is that there isn't any one of us that has every single quality of leadership that is necessary. And so what I have come to believe is we need to design our leadership based on our strengths and then compensate for where we have weaknesses. Okay, so obviously you did that. You had a coach, and now she died. You will need to find a replacement or some other strategy to support you in this area where it's not your strength, clearly. You own it and you know it, and you're not defensive about it. So I trust with this attitude of non-defensive inquiry about how can I do it, that you will get somewhere. That's what I can say in a short call like now. And I want to go back to Laurel and just check with you, because we have a few minutes, only a couple of minutes left for this segment before I open it up to questions from others. And just hear a reflection of how is this finding you and what question remains for you now.
Yeah, I've got a lot out of this entire conversation, and both for the project that I'm working on and for another project. And I guess what's left as a curiosity is really like how to structure an organization in a way that both allows me to move through the world effectively as kind of one of the core organizers, but also calls people into leadership, especially in those areas where I have gaps.
So two things. One is, further down the line in the course itself, there is a segment about how to create functioning groups and organizations where we'll talk much more about all of this. For the moment, what I want to say is that there's something to be said for having systems that function well, not just individuals. We often make the error of thinking that if we have the same purpose and we share the same values, then everything else will work itself out. When in reality, we need to have agreements about a host of things, from how we make decisions to how we give each other feedback to what do we do with resources and all of those things. When the values are embedded in structures, individuals don't need to be saints to function collaboratively. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Our next meeting, we've been trying to have this conversation of how to kind of label ourselves, where there's about 8 of us on the core team, and whether or not we're co-chairs or core organizers. I'm curious about whether you think that having that label will impact how we move forward, if we should put that conversation off.
I would invite the people who are not in the leadership position, not you mm-hmm. and the other person, to say...
Yes.
How they see you, what they think your role is, what they think will be most effective in positioning you in the world. And in this way, you're inviting them to shaping and leadership.
That's so helpful.
Yeah, because you are locked within your own perspective. All of us are. And they are outside, and they can see it in a different way. All right. I'm going to keep the lines open for Laurel, Isaac, and Ellen, because they might still be involved in the conversation. And I invite everyone who has a question about the conversation that we've had so far, if there's any specific questions or comments as follow-up to this conversation for a few minutes, and then open it up more widely. Do you have a follow-up?
I think so, because I was inspired by what I just heard. When you said, what is your role? Or somebody said, what is a person's role? I'm working in a situation where people are brand new to nonviolent communication, and they are discussing key issues for the organization and how to inspire them to, from the for very beginning things in terms of how to have a conversation about the issue. It's like not initially about the issue, it's like how to talk about the issue.
It's very difficult to make agreements about how to talk about things, because we have our decades of life already stacked up with particular habits. And when we talk and we have even a modicum of passion about what we say, all agreements fall by the wayside and we just follow habits. This is, again, the piece about systems and not just having to have it all be individual stretching. But this is a longer topic than what we can cover in the moment.
Thank you, Mickey.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Any questions about this course or what you might expect or what we're going to cover?
I'm hoping to create a cohort here in the D.C. area. Is there a way through you or the Academy I can identify folks from this area?
I think on the call you will be able to do that, and it might be a nice idea for some metropolitan centers, if people want to do that, is people can name, I'm from here and I would like to meet in real time with people who are also from here. And then when we see the people who are pressing a number, we can share with all of you the email addresses.
Great. All righty. I'm in.
I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it on the call yet. I was curious if you could just offer a quick tip about a specific thing, and I was just wondering if there was time.
I can be generally quick. The question is, can you be quick in describing it?
Yes. The biggest problem I face inside myself is recreating traumatic memories, especially around exclusion. And I was wondering if there's just a quick tip you can offer around stopping doing that and focusing on what's already being included.
I would say if this happens to you frequently, I would give you a practice of at the end of each day, at the end of every day, write down 3 instances that day in which you were included in something and start building the internal capacity to notice.
Thank you. I'm grinning and trying to cry, but I'm just grinning. Thank you very much.
Okay, great.
This is my first time with any workshop, and I am not understanding what the flow is going to be. Getting the impression that the flow is going to be a one-on-one as examples for the rest of us. Is that accurate?
Thank you. I'm very grateful that you're asking this question. Here is how it functions. Ahead of time, you will get materials, which will involve a whole bunch of readings and reflection questions. During the actual class time, we go back and forth between me interacting with individuals like we're doing here and creating time for small groups to be in discussion and sharing on their own. The technology that we're using allows for small groups. So for part of every week, you will be put into small groups to discuss your experience, your reflections, your challenges, and work with them. Is that sufficient of a response for you?
Yes, I'm beginning to get a picture. Thank you.
Okay, there is one more.
I wanted to clarify the question I asked earlier about burnout. By burnout, I meant not the I have so many things to do and no time to do them all. Rather, the world is so big and the problems are so big and they feel too big to handle.
Got it. So there's just the overwhelm of grief about what is happening in the world. Is that what you're talking about?
Not only with the whole world in general, but the number of problems that I see in the society where I live.
So this is kind of like one of the bigger problems, and here is the paradox. The vast majority of people essentially tune out these experiences to be able to get through the day. And that is at very high cost, because tuning out is a form of numbing. If you're numb, you're not really present to life, and life becomes dull, which is the life of so many people that my heart aches just from that. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, there is a way of opening your heart, remaining open to the intensity of suffering around you that can be overwhelming and can be paralyzing also. So for me, I can only tell you what I try to do. And there are other practices that I'm familiar with. One of the things that I try to do is to walk towards the grief even more and allow it to crack me so that I actively mourn and wail and weep as often as I can, because every time I do it, I have more energy afterwards. Is that making sense?
It's making sense. I'm wondering if there are also other practices.
Yes, there is a practice of Tonglen. Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
I think that's also a practice that can help, because it brings companionship. It ties you and all you know to all you don't know in a web of tenderness. So that's the second practice. The third thing that comes to mind is a quote from Emma Goldman that you may be familiar with. She says, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of this revolution." And I confess being weak in this area, and I want to continue to develop it. But the basic principle here is to bring joy and fun and pleasure and celebration of life into the work that we do, even as the work is breaking our heart. Those are the three that I can think of off the top of my head. Is that helpful?
Yes. Thank you.
Mickey, this is Mary, and I'm trusting that some people on the call maybe aren't familiar with the Buddhist practice of Tonglen. So I'm wondering if you could just say a few more words about it before you move on.
Thank you. I really appreciate this. I was so connecting here that I forgot about that. Thank you. Yeah. The practice of Tonglen is simply breathing in whatever suffering you're aware of in yourself and whatever your attention is focused on, and breathing out all the people now in the past and in the future who have had a similar experience of suffering. And it creates connection in a way that feels really tender to me. Is this enough, Mary?
Yes, that's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that you asked. And there is one more hand.
Hi. I want to say that I do practice Tonglen, and when I'm working with our team, we do Tonglen, and I've taught it. It is hard to go toward the grief and break, but I do that. I have a question, because we were doing a presentation for the Auschwitz Project, mm-hmm. and one of our clips, it showed part of the Armenian team dealing with the Armenian genocide. It showed us dancing and laughing. It showed the joy of co-creating, creating together our work. Is that inappropriate to show funders? Is that inappropriate to show in the face of the enormity of the Holocaust?
I don't feel like I'm the authority to answer. I can only say that there's always a delicate line to walk around loss and hardship. And that line always has to be walked with your personal integrity. It's considering a lot of things. And there is some way, some mysterious way in which life is everything at once. The horror and the beauty coexist. I never want to pretend like either one of them is gone. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, and they both do exist. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mary, I think we are complete with this segment.
Yes, thank you, Mickey. Wow, this call has just been riveting to me. I so appreciate what you brought to the call, and I appreciate your volunteers and especially the way that you put them together. Just really moving. And so I'd like to spend the next few minutes talking about your 12-week course, because this is just like just the tiniest taste of what the 12-week course has to offer. And then we'll end the call with you giving another tip, a closing tip for what you'd like people to walk away with, and more time for people to ask questions about your 12-week course. Let's start by just asking a few questions. So in this course has been unique for the Academy and I think for you, in that you've asked many organizations and people to partner with you, such as NBC Academy, of course, but then also Joanna Macy, the Meta Center for Nonviolence, the Network of Spiritual Progressives, the Peace Alliance, and really many more. And so tell me, how important are these partnerships in shaping your vision and content for the course, the full 12-week course?
I'm happy to answer this, I just want to start with a real curiosity. I'd like to know of the people that are on the call, if you heard about this, not through me and not through the NBC Academy, but through one of these partners, through some social change organization that sent out information, I would love to hear how many people came through that, because that was one of the pieces of partnership, was about finding a way to reach beyond our usual crowds. And it's not that many. I am quite surprised, but it's taking time for the numbers to go up. But more to the point, I would say that these partnerships have shaped my vision in a different way from my content. They have shaped my vision through years of friendship, conversations, intense interactions sometimes, difficult interactions, and a tremendous amount of learning, both direct and indirect, through engaging with the work of many people. The work of social change is never one person discovering something. It is always, in some form or another, coming together. And then in terms of the content, one of the things that we asked the partners is to provide materials for the course. So we have a syllabus that everyone who registers for the course will receive, and that syllabus contains a whole bunch of articles and resources that are way beyond what I could have pulled together on my own. So that's how that came together, and it's very satisfying in this way.
Thank you, Mickey. And I know that probably anybody who took this course could benefit from it. I'm actually certain of that. But who do you think would benefit the most?
I don't know, but my gut tells me that it's people who are already doing work and want to be way more effective in doing it and way more aligned with their values and way more resourced as they do it. So I'm thinking people who need energy, or the people I spoke with about leadership who want to have frames and tools for putting their values into action. They're already doing the work. I don't think that this is particularly designed for people who haven't yet done social change work and are hoping to find a way to do it. This won't give them ideas for what campaigns to join. It will just give people ideas about how to do the work in a way that really demonstrates the world that we want to create.
Thank you. And I think earlier you talked about how the course will be structured, but it's been a while. Would you mind just saying a word or two about how you structure your courses so
yes,
that people have a sense of you and what they might expect?
Yeah. For people who love to read, this will be a joy because we have so many resources and so much for each of the 12 weeks, a lot of information. And some people will read all of it, some people will read some of it, and some people will read none of it. Then we all come together and we talk together about the issues, the concept, how they show up in real life, like we did today. We didn't talk about abstract concepts, but there are a lot of abstract concepts that have informed how I responded to people. So we will both talk concepts and active challenges that people are facing. For part of the time, people will be in small groups talking about how to apply what they're learning in their own individual situations. That's kind of what will happen each time, a going back and forth between being in the whole group and talking about situations, me working with individuals or explaining concepts or answering questions, and people being in small groups and engaging more actively with the material.
Thank you. There are three parts to the course, and so I'm just going to say the titles. The part one is Social Change and Nonviolence. Part two is Working with Others for Change. And part three is Creating a World That Works for All. Can you give a brief overview of what topics will be covered in your course? Because I'm guessing that the people on the call would really want to know a little bit more of the meat of the program.
The first part is kind of, superficially speaking, is on the individual level. It goes way beyond that, but it is really learning all we need to learn to understand how we show up, how we do the work as individuals in line with the principles of nonviolence, those three pillars of love, justice, and truth, and what that means in terms of things like power, like how we deal with the legacy of privilege, how we deal with our own judgments of other people that may interfere with working together. So that's the first part. The second part is about how to work in groups and organizations, how to do the nitty-gritty of making movements that are effective, that work, that, again, embody the values, but beyond the individual or interpersonal level. The third part is about how we engage with the big structures of the world. How do we conceive of movements, of actions, of campaigns? How do we envision what we want instead of just opposing? How do we work really towards the world, and where are the leverage points, and what can we take on to change the actual structures that govern our lives? Those are the three parts.
Yeah, I know, Mickey, when you first came to us and asked about offering this course, I was so excited then, and just even this taste of this class today, I just think it's going to be such a huge benefit for so many people. If there's one thing that you'd want people to walk away with from this call, what would it be? One thing.
One thing. That's so hard. Mm-hmm. I would say one thing that I haven't yet touched on is that we become, in my experience and belief, we become more creative and more outrageous when we're able to include the needs of the people against whom we are struggling and speak to their hearts. In every situation, whether confronting the police, building a coalition, or designing a campaign, if we keep focusing on a solution that is likely to work for everyone, it has the most transformative potential and the most kind of like inoculation against us becoming yet another incarnation of what we already have in the world.
And do you agree with me that those solutions almost always seem impossible before a person focuses in the way that you're suggesting? It magically transforms the impossible to the possible?
That's a nice way to look at it.
Okay, so I want to remind everybody that Nikki's program, Working for Transformation Without Recreating the Past, starts June 17th. And in an effort to make it possible for as many people as possible to take this course and for there to be as little financial constraint as possible, we've offered a variety of ways to register where you make the choice of how much you would like to pay for it. And in addition to that, there are several scholarships available. All you have to do is go to the website, nvcacademy.com/transformation. The website is nvcacademy.com/transformation. And you can register for the course, and it starts June 17th. So I'd like to see, is there anybody on the call who has a question about the content or structure of Mickey's program?
There may be several that I might have to miss. I know the calls are going to be recorded. You know, I'm going to really miss a lot because you're not in on the small groups, or can you still get quite a bit if you're going to be missing a handful of them?
One small group is always recorded. So although you don't participate, you get the feel of that bigger intimacy.
Okay, thank you. And actually, I've gotten quite a bit from this call and haven't participated, so I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So I'd like to know about how much time each week is allocated for calls and at what time of day or what time of the week those calls would be.
It's 2 hours at this time, 12 to 2 Pacific time.
When you were talking about the third phase of the course and talking about how to change the structures that we were embedded in, what are some examples of the kind of structures you're talking about?
Ultimately, personally, I want to change the entire economic structure of the world. But I don't know yet the movement that has the capacity to do that quite yet. But it is at whatever level you can do it, and in the most radical and transformative way that you can do it. And hopefully, if we build enough traction, eventually it will change the paradigm into one that works for everyone. Look, at one point, we lived in a world that was structured around pure and direct coercion. You were born into a particular place in life, and that's all that it was. At that time, if anyone came to the people who lived there and said, you know what, sometime in the future it might be possible for people to move around some in society, for there to be competition, for people to choose what they do with their life. And you know what the people of that time would have said? They would have said, that's ridiculous. That will create, it's impossible. You can't create a social order without people knowing exactly where they fit. And yet it happened in a similar way. To tell people now, you know, you don't have to have these structures, these, you know, these competitive structures, command and control structures. Instead, we can really build a world that is fully collaborative and cooperative. People look at you like you're crazy. And yet I believe if we stay long enough, it's the only future possible. So it's anywhere on the spectrum. Thank you.
What's the end result? What do we expect by end of the session?
Thank you. I love this question. I would say By the end, I'm hoping you will have more knowledge, more understanding, more skill, more self-confidence, and way more willingness to step into your full power, bring people together, and take action.
Thank you very much. I also just want to say, if you go to that page that I talked about, nvcacademy.com/transformation, it will list all the course dates and all the times, and it will give way more detailed information about the course. I mean, quite a lot of detail. It should be really clear to you when you look at the page what you're in for. And Mickey, there's one other question here that was written in. This person says, will the course provide tools and frameworks to be actionable, or will those arise organically through the participation on collective and group calls?
I think that it's both, but mostly this is not about figuring out campaigns or actions. It is figuring out how to have campaigns and actions that are really aligned with our values and vision.
Thank you. And I just want to see, is there anybody else on the call who has a question about the course or content for Mickey?
I have people that I want to know about this possibility. Is this what we've just done? Is this recorded that we can access it and share it with them?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked that question. So this call is recorded, and everybody who registered for it will receive a link to the recording in a few days. The 12-week course is also recorded, and everybody who registers for it will get copies of that course as well, whether you can attend or not, every single session. So you can listen to it yourself more than once and continue to dive into the material between classes. Thanks for asking the question. I just want to remind people again that Mickey's 12-week course, Working for Transformation Without Recreating the Past, starts June 17th. You have plenty of time to register and tons of opportunities to register with different ways. And I hope you'll take advantage of the course. I really think it's going to be an amazing course. Mickey's courses always are, but this one especially we're pretty excited about just because of the implications of it and the way that it could contribute to your organizations and then, of course, the world that we all live in. And so I want to close today by thanking Mickey. Thank you so much for your work today and for all the work you've done with the NVC Academy. And I noticed there are two hands up that just came up, so I hesitate to close. So I'm just going to take these two calls.
Mickey, do you think it's possible to work for transformation and recreate the ancient wisdom without recreating the past?
I appreciate this. The ancient wisdom, I want it to be integrated. I don't want to go back anywhere. I want to go forward and integrate wisdom.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring up the opportunity that Mickey suggested that after the call that we have different metropolitan areas.
I'm glad you brought it up because there is a Facebook page that we will send you the link to, and I would say in the Facebook group, that would be a place where you could post your request for others in your area. Certainly in the 12-week program, that opportunity will be given to you. All right. Mickey, thank you. Everybody else, thank you. I'm going to unmute all lines so we can have sort of a big, raucous goodbye.
Bye, everyone. Hope to connect with you starting in 2 weeks.